Okay, could I make it 30 minutes?
We are running out of time, so that we were able to engage at the end of the... Thank you so much. Over to you, Mr. Khoza.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, perhaps I could just give a brief introduction, and then this Chief Executive Officer will carry on. The CIDB, B's mandate will be covered in the presentation. I just wanted to mention that in the course of this financial year, the board has focused on a couple of priority areas that will also be covered in the presentation. One area is the area of contractor development, both as part of our mandate and in previous presentations to the committee, issues have come up in this area. And also the board has looked at the registration criteria for contractors in the various categories with a view to responding to the imperatives of the industry at this time. We are also looking at what we call the phase two of the register of contractors, and we also have weighed in on the procurement prescripts and offered assistance, especially in light of current recent developments and in legal recent legal developments. We have also tried to assist the industry in that area. I just need to mention as well that the term of the current board ends next month in December. So all being well, next time that you convene to receive the report of the CIDB, you would have a new board representation. The minister, or rather the process of electing or nominating the next board is underway right now. And then finally, we came with a light heart that, yes, we're going to present to you an unqualified audit, but we've heard a comment about emphasis of matter. We do have a couple of emphasis of matter, but in our presentation, we will try and address those because we do feel that they should not the issues would be fully addressed before the next audit. I would now like to hand over to the CEO, Mr. Khoza.
Thank you. Honorable Acting Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues, the presentation that we've prepared tried to focus mainly on the presentation of the annual report as opposed to the general business of the CIDB. Obviously, the performance during the past financial year was anchored on the basis of our strategic plan and the business plan. Therefore, there are areas that are actually highlighted. There are other areas that we felt have become part of the business of the CIDB. We'll mention them, but we felt the main areas of focus should be what led to the performance of the CIDB during the reporting period. The presentation line-out is as follows. We'll give an introduction, which is mainly the legislative framework and mandate of the CIDB. Without going into details, we've been presenting this, but we feel that it's always good to make it part of all the presentations that we do to stakeholders, to Parliament, and everybody else, so that if we need to refer to these, they are actually available easily. We'll deal with the highlights for the financial year 2009 and 2010, or to 2010, and then a performance summary. We'll then allow the CFO to present the financial performance report, as well as the AG's report, which will look into the financial performance, the report of the Auditor General, as well as the corrective action plan that we are implementing to deal with the issues that have been highlighted in the report of the Auditor General. I may have to just say that in terms of the mandate of the CIDB, we summarize it in two pillars. I'll just refer to that one quickly. for a very specific reason. As you know, we are an entity of government, therefore we are driven by the mandate that we were given. We summarize this mandate in two pillars. The first one is that of providing an enabling environment, and we state it as follows: the provision of strategic leadership to industry stakeholders to stimulate sustainable growth, reform, and development. And all the time, when we get to these words, people ask us how we do it. We must just remember that when the CREP was established, the industry had been in decline for a period of about two decades. So in terms of reform, for instance, you'll see that the standard for uniformity that has been introduced has actually changed the way procurement reform takes place in the construction industry. In terms of development, you'll see that our focus going into the future is on the performance of the industry as well as the improvement. So there are many tools that we're introducing into the industry so that that takes place. In terms of stimulating sustainable growth, we go around the country, we preach sustainable growth as opposed to just growth. Obviously, we don't award projects, so we cannot dictate to the clients as to which projects must be brought forward and which ones not. But we try and encourage all government departments, municipalities, as well as the SOEs to please bring forward projects that must be dealt with, especially after the end of the 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup infrastructure. We've identified a gap where some departments and municipalities are not bringing forward their projects, so there may be a gap that would lead to some of the companies closing down. But there's a lot of work that we're doing around that pillar. The second pillar is that of regulating the construction industry. And again, we're focusing on the public sector. The private sector has only one responsibility in terms of sending us the projects that they've awarded contractors for. And that would help in terms of the track record of contractors. So it's those two pillars that we've used over the years to summarize our mandate, because it could actually seem a bit complicated. And perhaps at this stage, I need to just say that, yes, we have a functional board, as the chairperson has indicated. The term of the board is 3 years, and the current board's term ends in the middle of December. We have issued an advert for calling for nominations of new board members. Next week we'll have a meeting where we'll sit down with the department to go through what our Act says about the appointment of the board. We've also received confirmation of current board members who are available to serve the second term. According to the Act, they may actually serve a second term, but they need to indicate to the minister so that the minister may then consider them. So that is at an advanced stage. We also have board committees. We have an audit committee, a risk committee, as well as the remuneration committee. The annual report details how the remuneration took place for all these members. I must just highlight, although the CFO will actually give details later on, just wanted to indicate that in terms of the remuneration of board members, we've actually grouped them together as board members. You'll see that where it says risk committee, you might think there's only one member. That person is not a board member. The board members who are part of that committee have their meetings indicated under the main board table. And again, the CFO would take us through that one. There may be other meetings that the board members attended. We have board task teams that assist with specific areas. So under a column headlined other meetings, that is where we actually deal with the various meetings that the board members may attend as the board task team or attending board committees. In terms of challenges and priorities, as highlights for the 2009-2010 financial year, like the chairperson has indicated, the training and contractor development was prioritized together with the review of the registration criteria. We've been to Parliament here where certain issues may have been raised. The ministers in the past have also raised certain issues, so we've been reviewing the registration criteria. A special board task team working with management looked at how we could actually review the registration criteria in particular, but also training and contractor development, which has been prioritized. We are in the process of finalizing the regulations amendments to assist in easing the process of registration with the CIDP, with the intention of, while maintaining the standard, we also make sure that the emerging sector is accommodated. It is quite a big project, and I think before the end of the year, we would have submitted to the minister the document with these amendments so that they can be published for public comment. After that, we'll then consider the inputs of the public, and then they may be gazetted. So we believe that during the course of next year, these would be rolled out. We've been improving communication with stakeholders at various levels, either through the commercial press, but also through the forums that we organize right through the year. We've actually increased our participation in this respect, working with other stakeholders, but also in terms of the things that we do as the CIDP. Research and development and academic excellence, we prioritize this area. We have requested from the National Treasury to put aside 5 million rand so that we can kickstart the process of research and development and academic excellence. And that retention was approved, and therefore we are now beginning to talk to the academic institutions so that we can assist in terms of focusing on research, which has had a decline over quite some time. Industry performance and best practice, as part of phase two of the registers, we need to now introduce best practice. As it is with our tradition, we consult quite widely, make sure that people have buy-in. We have even emerging contractors participating in our pilot. So in the next 12 months or so, we should be able to wrap up the results of the pilots that we are running around the country, and therefore people will begin to see what work has been done, and then we need to prepare regulations. So the work that has been done in the last financial year has actually focused on these areas. Continuing with the challenges and priorities, one of the things that we want to do is to make sure that the registration process stays within the 21 working days, that is a turnaround time, which is legislated. We are improving software. We are going on to a major drive in terms of the software rewrite. It will cost quite a lot of money, but we believe that that's what we need to do. And then we also have embarked on a project called the Electronic Document Management System, EDMS, which the banks also use. This will assist us in terms of saving on space because the files are increasing all the time. But also we believe that this will assist us in combating fraud and corruption, either in relation to the staff that work for the CIDB, because we'll scan all documents that come through, and nobody would be allowed to bring in documents into a file, and then they get considered later without having been scanned before. In terms of the expenditure for the 2010 FIFA World Cup tournament, we were requested to disclose our expenditure, although it's actually expensed for the next one, or for the, let's say, the next financial year, which is actually current with respect to the last financial year. We actually declared in the annual report that we did not buy tickets for anybody, ourselves and people outside, that we did buy the Bafana Bafana shares, but we chose a cheaper version because we wanted to use that in conjunction with team building within the CIDP itself, while at the same time we show our patriotic support. So it was the cheaper version. We printed staff's names on the back, together with board and audit committee members who are not part of the board, because we felt they must actually see the alignment of what we do and the alignment of what happened with 2010. And I need to just emphasize that the main intention here was that while the excitement about the soccer was a very important milestone in South Africa, it's actually the fact that the construction industry showcased world-class construction that we're trying to actually display to the people. We believe that this also was a wake-up call for all of us, that where we are short of infrastructure, because we could demonstrate the capability and capacity, we can now do this in terms of the construction of dams, in terms of the construction and maintenance of wastewater treatment plants, where we have been lacking for quite a long time. So to us, it was not just soccer, but it was about construction. So the total cost was 78,190 rand, including VAT, And again, we felt that we must actually show the kind of T-shirts that we bought. They actually displayed for board members and executive in the annual report. Continuing with challenges and priorities, the establishment of the construction contact centers, we've said over quite a long time that we wanted to establish these offices in the provinces. We do have the 9 provinces with CIDP staff working there. We have launched to date 8 offices, and there's one that is outstanding in terms of its permanent home, but there are staff members working there fully accountable to the CIDP. So all provinces actually have a CCC, which was established through a partnership with the provincial departments of public works. So we just left with the launch of an office where there's been procurement problems in the Northwest. The register of professional service providers, we've mentioned this on a number of occasions. We had a board task team established to assist with how we should approach this. The board task team has recommended that we explore how it could be implemented. I'll explain just now why we have a bit of a challenge. So the board task team had to be pulled out of the main board to actually look at this closely, working with management, and the recommendation is that we should explore a two-phase approach, one that is a basic database, which we can implement as soon as possible, and we hope that through this we'll be able to get rid of the fly-by-night. Phase two will be a value-added component, which we still have to consult on. Now, you may be wondering why the two-phase approach. The Act does not give details on how this register must operate, unlike the Register of Contractors. Now, when you go and consult with the stakeholders out there, they want a register that has more value. Now, that is not in the Act. We could actually go ahead and establish this, the register, but some people may complain that they did not get projects because of how this thing is structured. So we need to make sure that we either amend the Act so that there are specific instructions on how the register must actually operate, so that we're not forced to actually go to court and defend ourselves, as well as the government departments who may have used the register to appoint consultants. This is work in progress. It has to go back to the board again in December. The board task team will meet just before that, so that we finalize the approach that will be taken by the board. In terms of performance information, we just wanted to give a bit of background because we had a few challenges there. The performance information for the CIDP for quite a long time was described as ongoing due to the nature of the business we do, to the structure of the various programs. The work that we do has been cross-cutting for quite a long time. Prompted by the former minister and the board, we then embarked on a process of improving the way we state the targets. We've attended workshops. We've called experts to come and talk to us about the structuring of performance information, and there's improvement. We've had, like I said, training and review that was done internally, as well as experts from outside coming to advise us, and we're changing all the time. We will be changing the current targets as well, and we'll approach the executive authority where we feel that they must be tightened up. In terms of the reporting period, we revised the targets after the first training that we received. Unfortunately, when it was submitted, it was towards the end of the financial year. We were advised by the Auditor General that that would be acceptable and that the AG would only look at the last two quarters where the changes were actually being effected. Unfortunately, the minister was advised not to approve the revised targets, so we had to go back to the old targets to not waste time. So what you see in the annual report is actually the targets that were presented to Parliament before. So we may have changed the way we were doing business, but the targets have actually stayed the same so that we could actually comply with the targets that were presented to Parliament. I will now start with the core programs. There are 4 core programs. You'll see also in our annual report that we even went beyond the 4 core programs in terms of our target. This year, we've actually gone back to the approach where we look at the core programs because the others are internal matters, support functions, and therefore those targets were not supposed to be used to drive the performance of the CIDP. So I'll deal with the core programs and just mention about the support functions that reside within the Office of the CEO, as well as corporate services. Now, growth and contractor development, that's one of the programs. The main pillars of this program, which is a division, are the National Contractor Development Program, which is a framework. The second one is the management of the construction contact centers, which are basically our provincial offices. And as I indicated, we have 9 of them. So the performance information will relate to these main pillars. In terms of NCDP, National Contract Development Program, we had listed quite a number of things that we wanted to achieve. One of them, the forecast implementation of NCDP, monitoring and evaluation. We have made sure that various documents have been used to make sure that contractor development is supported, and we've listed them there. Private sector involvement, we've signed MOUs with the banks. We're hoping that we'd have NetBank also under our arm by the end of the financial year. Unfortunately, the legal department at NetBank had asked for postponements, but we have signed now with them as well. It's just that it could not be reported at that time because that's not when it was done. So we had 3 MOUs in total with the big banks by the end of the financial year. And then we've also dealt with a number of other institutions, including those that deal with non-financial issues. The facilitation of M&E, the scoping was completed, the workshops were conducted so that people would understand what we intended doing with that. Best practice contractor development, this document could not be published. We decided on a phased implementation because of the challenges that we encountered through the consultative process. But all the work that we had intended to do is actually going forward. The integration of contractor development together with the charter, this was delayed when the charter council could not be constituted. We're still hanging in there. The Department of Public Works is actually driving that process. The last meeting could not actually conclude on this matter, so there was a delay. But we are fully participating in the construction charter. We've supported it, as we reported before, in terms of the third-party review leading to the Chapter 9 sector codes. Contractor tips and advice, and again, to support contractor development, we've provided training on the revised tips and advice to consolidate with other issues, and there are other deliveries that have been done on that. In terms of the construction contact centers, I'm giving a bit of detail here. We'll then summarize the others. We just wanted to demonstrate how we wanted to actually structure performance information and report on the update on that. We've had the 8th CCC, this indicated CCC, it's actually 8th CCC launched in Limpopo. Right at the end of the financial year, we even forced issues because this had to be done in the evening. We normally do them during the day, but we were worried that we would not be able to launch this office during the financial year. So the provincial department agreed. Northwest is the one that is outstanding, and again, it's beyond our control, but we've kept the budget that we would use for IT infrastructure. The communication strategy has been revised to link with corporate strategy. As you know, these offices may seem very far from us, and the way they deal with stakeholders may seem different, but we want to make sure that they come from the same organization and therefore they must be linked to the same foundation. Various objectives were achieved at the various levels and all according to the targets. In terms of the construction industry performance, we had various objectives that were achieved as targeted. NIMS, which is National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy, had to be delayed again due to funding. We've had a meeting yesterday with the department. We've been told that we can now access funding. We've just sent a letter requesting a transfer so that we can quickly roll out this program, which is very crucial for the emerging sector. The Employment Skills Development Agency, as part of Infrastructure Delivery Skills, is run by this program. We had asked for funding from the Department of Labor as well as the NSF. Both were declined. We also approached the construction sector. We couldn't get funding. We've now decided to do it within our own resources at this stage as a pilot, and we believe that it will begin to make impact because a lot of people who could not graduate because they did not have experiential training will now have access to that. But we're doing it as a pilot first, but we believe that once we roll it out fully, it will make a lot of impact in terms of skills in the country. In terms of procurement and delivery management, the third program, it has a number of pillars, but in terms of improving public sector infrastructure delivery, we have a program that we call IDIP. A brochure was completed and printed. It was aligned with the National Department of Public Works initiatives, and then there are various training initiatives that were done with departments as indicated in our targets. Improving public sector procurement reform, as you know, we've standardized procurement in the construction industry so that anybody who does construction from government must actually do it in a structured way. We have nominated four different forms of contracts. We rolled these out. We made sure that the public actually knows about these so that there's no confusion. The GCC, FIDIC, as well as NEC, and we also had practice notes to explain to stakeholders in terms of specific areas where there was a bit of confusion. Continuing with PDM, again, the Register of Professional Service Providers, I've spoken about that, so I won't go into it again. Compliance enforcement, there are many people who participate in fraudulent activities, either approaching CRDP staff and submitting fraudulent information or approaching public sector clients submitting fraudulent information. We deal with all these cases. We have a forensic investigation company that does this. We've had to modify the contract because the issue is quite serious, and we've had to reallocate more funding to make sure that the service providers that have been appointed actually can do their work. Service excellence, in terms of the construction register service, which is normally called registers, that's the last core program. We've introduced what we call the business process management to try and improve efficiency. The outlay of the department is such that the applications will come in one side and come out the other end with improved and optimized flow. We, as indicated before, we decided to enhance our software systems, and that is in hand, including the electronic document management system that I spoke about. Stakeholder communications, we've achieved this as required, but we also expanded the way we do things, maybe going into this year, although it doesn't form part of the reporting period. We've started also with the what we call the construction summit. It was successfully held in May, but it was planned during the course of last year, but targeted for May this year. We will continue with this as an annual event, and we'll actually report to Parliament about the progress that we're making. In terms of corporate services and the Office of the CEO, like I said, these are mainly support functions, and most of the issues that would have been covered here are actually covered under the core programs. In terms of stakeholder management and communications, which actually sits in my office, we're responsible, as given in the Act, to coordinate the stakeholder forum membership, which lasts for a period of 2 years. We've done that successfully in the last financial year. We also have held a stakeholder forum, which we thought would be in September, but the minister chooses the date. We ended up with October, but we've decided to adopt October because that's the time that we can launch the annual report to the stakeholders after submitting it to Parliament in September. So it would be unfair to actually present it to the stakeholders without the documents having been submitted to Parliament. The communication strategy has now been developed and split into two. We have a policy that has been approved by the board, and then the strategy in terms of detailing how things would be done on an annual basis, that is what we're busy with now. In terms of financial performance and Auditor General's report, I would request the CFO to take us through that, and he will actually reflect on the remuneration of board members and the members of the subcommittees.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, colleagues, thank you very much. The presentation for the on the financial performance and the AG report will focus on the actual financial performance, which is actual versus budget, how we utilize the budget that was allocated to us for the current year or the year under review. Just a quick reflection on the annual financial statements, also touching on the remuneration of board members. The report of the Auditor General, the opinion, and the emphasis of matters, issues that have come up there, irregular expenditure, the corrective action plan that we're putting into place in order to resolve the issues that have been raised by the AG, and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure matter that arose. In terms of budget, for the 2009-10 financial year, overall we achieved a surplus for the financial year. We had, in terms of revenue, total budget of 95.5 million, and in terms we actually achieved 110 million of that. So there was an over recovery of 14.5 million on revenue. The bulk of it came from registration fees, 12.9 million, and 1.5 million came from interest revenue that we raised through the banks. On the expenditure side, total expenditure budgeted was 95.5 million. As you would know, the normal expenditure process is not to budget for any deficit, you know, through national treasury. So we didn't expect any. We expected to break down in terms of our revenue against the expenditure there. But the actual performance on expenditure, we spent 82.1 million against budget of 95.5 million. So there was an underspend of about 18.4 million. The bulk of that underspend, if you look at the bottom part where we talk about surplus analysis, we've analyzed it into three areas. One is the revenue over recovery that I said mainly came from registrations as well as interest. This is revenue that we never expected, you know, for the year that came through registrations. There was expenditure underspending of 6.4 million. And we've got non-cash adjustments, you know, such as depreciation, bad debt, write-off, you know, adjustments that we actually put in through there. And that amounts to or totals the 27.9 million. Maybe also to mention something about the budget for the year. If you'll see when I go through the financial performance or of the annual financial statements in terms of revenue. Our revenue in the 2007-08 year dropped down by 14% in that year, and we had to go back to National Treasury in order to motivate for additional allocations. So when I talk about the financial performance now on the annual financial statements, you'll see a big jump of about 41% in revenue. It's because when you relate to the drop that we had, so we had a very low base, you know, from which we were actually moving, hence the big jump of about 41%. To continue here, and now we're going into the annual financial statements themselves, and this issue that I was just mentioning now, in terms of revenue from government or grants, we've increased by 41% from 41.8 million in the previous year, and that's also because of that drop that we had in the year before. Registrations increased by 33% actual from 35.3 million in the previous year. Our total expenditure increased by 12% compared to the previous year, and this the bulk of it relates to staff and marketing costs. I think you only saw previously the CEO spoke about stakeholder management communication that actually was embarked on, and hence also the increase in the marketing cost. On the staff cost overall, if you compare year to year, we actually in line about, if you go to about page 95 of our report, on the staff movement, you're talking about 3%. If you go to also the remuneration by for the executives as well, I think we're going to around 12% as well. So you know, in terms of that overall, we are in line in terms of our growth. Finance income interest has grown by 27% in the previous year, and we've achieved a deficit. Apologies about the heading. It's actually a surplus of 21 million. That's 21 million. There's a reconciliation between. If you go to page 99 of the report itself, we reconcile what our budget total or budget performance against the actual performance of the annual financials is. and you see that there's a difference about 6.9 million, and those are non-cash items. So I'm saying that if you remove all the non-cash items from your annual financial statements, you will go back and arrive at that schedule that I presented initially of budget against the actual. Cash and cash equivalents, we're sitting at about, we've increased by 26 million from 35 million, and the bulk of this relates to investments that grew by about 29 million. The cash and cash equivalents, one might also question to say it seems to be a bit high, but if you look at our total commitments, I think it's note number, the commitments note, it lists about, note page 95, note 26.1. We have commitments of about 16 million against that cash. And if you go also to the accounts payables by balance, when you talk about the income received in advance, you've got about 24 million that is actually lying there. That's money that we owe contractors who've made deposits into our accounts and either have left them there because they know that they're going to come up at a later stage to do renewal of their registrations and all that. So it's an area that we can't just much control and all that, but we do have the cash to actually meet the commitment if they actually have to. We have to pay back those contractors. Accounts payables has decreased by about 1.2 million from about 16 million, and I mean mainly the growth is because our payment terms have actually improved on that. Income received in advance decreased by about 243,000, and that's the one that I was mentioning to say that is the bulk of the money that has been deposited by contractors, which at a later stage we either have to refund them if they do not come back to utilize it in any form. If we go to the report of the AG, we received an unqualified report for 2009 and 10 financial year with two emphasis of matter items. One relates to the finance leases. I think if you look at last year as well, we had that finance lease issue. I will give you background to that. Rental of office furniture of 738,000. In terms of the finance lease, the procurement process, there was nothing wrong with that in terms of actually carrying out the procurement processes. It's merely that we entered into a five in terms of a 3-year lease. National Treasury was approached for condonation regarding this, to which they replied that they feel there was no impropriety on the side of CIDB. However, they cannot condone that. That process carried on until close to the time of audit, and we couldn't actually close it. But subsequently, we have gone on to appeal that finding, from their side or ruling on their side. And we've agreed that CIDB should, or it was agreed that CIDB must actually do an appeal, regarding that. Because in terms of practice note 2008 and 9, it is indeed National Treasury who must actually approve that condonation. And that we've even confirmed with the Office of the Accountant General that they should actually condone that lease. So we are actually awaiting a response from their side regarding that. The other issue is with regard to the rental of furniture. When the CIDB started off, I think way back around 2002 and all that, we never had a fully fleshed capacity, so to speak. And as a result, since we were renting offices from, we started at CSIR, but when we moved into the other offices at the SABS, we got assistance from SABS, and we used one of their service providers to acquire furniture, to rent furniture. So basically, we never went through the procurement process at the time, which was really against policy, from the nation or regulations from National Treasury. Subsequently, we have now signed off or as a service provider, because in order to regularize that whole process, we needed to actually get the accounting officer to sign off on that sole service provider, and that the accounting authority should also ratify that. The ratification will be done in the next board meeting on the 7th of December. So in terms of the current financial year, that should actually take care of this issue, and it shouldn't arise again. And in the meantime, what we're doing is that we are acquiring furniture for the current year, because that rental furniture, we're still utilizing it. So we're acquiring new furniture that we're going to now own. We've put aside about 2 million When you looked at the surplus that we've shown just now, the surplus of about 21 million, in terms of how we're going to utilize that part of it, and that rollover has already been approved by National Treasury that we can roll over those funds. Part of it, we've put aside 2 million. So in terms of our allocation for budget for the current year, we did not put anything for capital expenditure, but we decided to rather utilize the extra over recovery that we're getting from our registration fees. So that should be taken care of as well. The AG has also written something that is not in the report. You'll not see in the annual report itself, but in the previous annual report, I think they used to include this. However, we just decided to include this as well and talk you through it. They've got the management letter report, which they list all other items, which if we're not taking care, we don't take care of them in the current year, could actually become a problem in terms of a potential audit qualification. We've now put down a corrective action plan cap, which lists, you know, the timelines and who's responsible and the specific action that should be resolved. The board is monitoring that. Audit committees is monitoring that as well as the CEO. We, over and above the cap, we've also got the AG has come up with a key controls document, which actually lists the specific items that we must actually really, really look after in order to ensure that things don't actually go bad for us in the current year. And this is being monitored on a quarterly basis with the AG. We've had one meeting already at which they assessed the progress that's been done so far. Internal audit is also doing work on this, on the follow-up on the issues that came up on the management letter. And these are just an example of the issues that have actually come up, you know, in the management letter itself, in the issues of assets and assets. You know, CRDB is also decentralized because we have a footprint in all the provinces right now. Assets becomes a challenge in terms of management, but we're actually putting controls in place to deal with that, ensuring that people, on a monthly basis, assets lists get sent out to employees or custodians, we call them. They actually have to come back to us and confirm that those assets are there and they exist and all that, and sign off on them. And then we do a reconciliation against our general ledger system. Presentation and disclosures and all that, we actually now started with what we call mock financial statements, so that at a particular intervals we produce financials as if we're doing a year end. You know, it gives us good practice, you know, in terms of actually preparation for year end and really anticipating what issues that could go wrong so that we can actually intervene on time. Revenue and debtors, there was an issue about the files, location of files, about two files that we couldn't, you know. But now we started the process of actually reconciling files. As we do the reconciliation of assets, we also reconciling files, because that is basically CIDB's product when you look at it. And issues of expenses and the creditors, normal accruals that we've been done, we started doing that as well. Finance leases, that's the issue we've just spoken about. What has been happening is that the service provider now is not invoicing us according to the contract, but now we actually are accruing the full contract amount so that later on, if they come on to actually claim that difference, we can always be have enough to actually cater for it. And journals, I think we do that also we will be taking care of, because we're doing monthly reconciliations at which you're also looking at these journals. And finally, I think the CEO will just take us through performance information quickly.
Okay, in terms of performance information,
this one, please.
In terms of performance information, as I indicated,
before, that we had a bit of a challenge in the past where our work was cross-cutting. Some of the targets were actually duplicated on the same things. We've cleaned up now how people set their targets in each program. We had training by various people. So we've even asked for external experts to actually take us through how targets should be set so that we actually conform to the SMART approach that we got from National Treasury. A second session is planned for November, December this year, so that those people who could not attend the first time can now attend. And from the next financial year, we don't have people that have not been trained on this. The targets for the current financial year are being reviewed as we speak. There's somebody who's actually doing that in the office, and will then, before the end of this week, see which ones could actually be submitted to the executive authority for approval, because we're asked to do it in the middle of the year as opposed to towards the end of the financial year.
The fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 71,000. What has happened is that previously, and this there's a before and after situation here. With effect from the 1st of October 2007, we started doing regular reconciliations, and we really put controls in place to ensure that for any movement on any file, we're able to reconcile it. But prior to that, we couldn't actually do that, because when you look at it, you shouldn't actually be writing off anything at CRDB, because contractors pay up front. So, it shouldn't be that somebody owes you, But because we never did any recons at the time, it became difficult to really say, when you come, we feel that, there's a refund due to you, we haven't reconciled and all that, there are other invoices that are lying somewhere, then we started refunding people. So by refunding people, we refunded people for money that they actually never really owed us, and hence when you do the write-off now and you look at the history of the account, you realize that there were those refunds that were done at the time that should not actually have happened. But as I say, from an effective point of the 1st of October 2007, we started doing those reconciliations, that's not actually taking place anymore. Thank you.
Some of the things that the CFO has mentioned, it was not our intention to end up with irregular expenditure. We thought we'd have a clean audit. Unfortunately, even when the AG said that if it was just one matter, there would not have been a problem. You can see that because National Treasury could not give us the condonation, the AG then had to consider the two matters. But if the one actually fell off, we would not have had irregular expenditure. That's the one point. The second point is, as it happens, the CFO indicated that where he was saying deficit is actually a surplus. We had to go to National Treasury and request permission to use a specified amount of money for the projects that the CRDB felt were critical. That approval was actually granted. So as we roll out these funds now, it is based on the National Treasury approval. Just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Mr. Koza. thank you for the presentation. I'll leave it to the members of honourable members to discuss. Honourable November, Honourable Magama, Honourable Gaila, and Honourable. Is your hand up, Mr. So, Honourable Manana and Mr. Stoll, in that order, please. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. The triple C's have been answered. It's only one province that's short. In fact, my first question, not a question actually, it's a concern, is that the team is only a Kwamadoda was there. What happened to Abafal? Secondly, or is it a belief that when it comes to construction, women are just, whatever. When I look at the picture of the Bafana team's T-shirts, it's also the same picture. It's Comrade Hostel, only with four women. And the T-shirts cost 78,000 and whatever with VAT. And 214 were bought. I wonder, I'm just looking at this team now. They are not even close to 50. What happened to the other T-shirts? Were they distributed amongst the communities with their names on them, of course? That's what has been said in the report. 214 T-shirts, so it means that every day we have been changing this one. Every day, not every Friday, every day. Because your staff complement is not as many as it is, as about equal to 214. We just leave that one there. The other one is on the Auditor General's report, page 73, on this very beautiful book. Oh, this is beautiful. Yeah, this is very much beautiful, and I'm sure it's also expensive too. Under internal control, that's an explanation on leadership. The CIDB did not have documented and approved internal policies and procedures to address planning, implementation, monitoring, and blah, 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 blah. I just wanted to be highlighted there. Just that. Eminye Mibuzo by Sheila Abany. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have a couple of questions. I listened to the CFO attentively when he dealt with the issue of these condonations. Now, Chair, a condonation you ask when you have not complied. Then request for a condemnation for something wrong that you did. So basically what you're asking for is a pardon. You see? In essence, that's what a condemnation is. Let's rectify the wrong that I did in the past. But you see, we are not told why they did not comply in the first instance. Except for the case of the furniture, for instance, that was bought through the suppliers of subs, yeah. Now, Chair, what comes as a surprise to me is that eight years down the line, this matter is before us as a matter of emphasis in this year's audit report. When in fact, this is what happened during, the 2002 towards what year, probably 2004-06 or so. Now, in the meantime, Chair, within these 8 years, what happened? Were they in the past 8 years, current financial year, not able to procure the furniture through proper processes, having set up their structures and so on? So why today? I mean, why in this annual report? When I believe this is a matter that could have been dealt with a couple of annual reports ago. So I think we need clarity on that. You see, my experience in local government where I come from, Chair, is, and I'm not accusing the CIDB of doing that, but I'm trying to merely explain my skepticism with condonations so that they understand from which perspective I look at it. You see, local government, municipal officials would short-circuit processes, procurement processes especially, within the system during the year. Then towards the end of the year, when in fact they have this external audit, they would engage the Auditor General to condone some of the things they did in the areas of, their non-compliance on specific matters, in the hope that it would reduce the matters of emphasis, or in fact even give them an unqualified audit opinion. I'm very skeptical about, these engagements and condonations. And I think, Chair, having noted what the CEO said, who spoke about the matter now, I actually think the fact that they refused, even if perhaps by law they could not, you know, pass the buck in terms of the powers to condone, which they used as a basis not to condone. Even if that were the case, my own view is I think they did right, Chair. They did exactly the right thing, CEO, not to condone, even if for, you know, for different reasons. You understand what I'm saying? Now, Chair, I have noted that in last year's annual report, there was a risk committee. It's not there anymore, or at least I don't see it in this year's report. Is it there? Okay, I've perhaps missed it, but I looked for it and I couldn't see it. Okay, and then on slide 32, whilst we're going to slide 32, Chair, I've noted that Mr. Kenon Noyana, now I see him with a different name. I think it's Mbuyiselo, Mbuyisele Noyana, something like that in the CITB's report. Are they the same person? Is it the same person who's also on the board of Agrimo? No wonder he attends one meeting at Agrimo. Masala, for that matter. Chief, I'm on the record, you can't see. Parliamentary privilege cannot be abused in such a manner. But, Chair, let me go to slide 32, right? Now, there's under performance information, the training that was conducted on 18 to 20 August, a second session is planned for November, December this year. How far are those arrangements? Has it already taken place? Is it going to take place before the end of this year, noting that we have less than 2 months left? So can we be just given specifics in terms of dates there? And then the issue of the targets following the third bullet point are being reviewed for submission. Chair, is that review complete? Has it been completed? If not, why not? If they are, how far are they? Have they been submitted to the authority for approval? Given the fact that this annual report, Chair, is for the period ending 31 March this year. So I'm sure by this time there should have been some movement. And then, Chair, the last two questions. In terms of the strategy for integrating contractor development, with regard to the issue of the construction charters, and of course, we're seeing that how far are they with regard to the development of the strategy? Will it see the light of day within a short space of time? And if not, what are the problems? I mean, and then lastly, the stakeholder workshops, the provincial stakeholder workshops, Chairperson, the one in KwaZulu-Natal, that was the outstanding province, has it taken place? Chair, I think those are just some of your thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Mark. I think we'll take those two members. Actually, to add to what Mr. Magama has just pointed out on the irregular expenditure on page 72 in this book, it's written as disclosed in note 15 to the financial statements. Irregular expenditure to the amount of 1 million was incurred. 738,400 of which relates to a proper tender process that has not been followed, and 356,000 relates to current finance lease expenditure,
where prior approval from the National Treasury were not obtained. About the risk management committee, it says on page 73, CIDB did not have documented and approved internal policies and procedures to address planning, implementation, monitoring, and reporting processes and events pertaining to performance management and reporting. I think maybe we need a clarity.
Okay, thank you, honorable members. If I may start with the issue of the reflection of the representation of CIDB by all men only. We do have a lady at the executive level. We do have many ladies at management level, which is equivalent to director level. When we advertise for positions, we actually consider those people that that have applied. That's where we are. The team that you see wearing the Bafana Bafana jerseys, that's just the board and the leadership team. We have a lot of people who also received the T-shirts, by the way. So it's actually the total CIDB staff together with the board as well as the audit committee that received T-shirts. So that would address the issue of the 214 shirts that were allocated. Yeah, it's everybody that actually works for the CIDB plus the board plus the audit committee. Yeah, and each got one shirt. They don't wear Monday to Friday different shirts. In terms of page 73, I could see that Honorable Member November as well as the Honorable Acting Chair have asked the same question about the fact that we did not have policies and procedures. That relates to the planning information, budgeting. The policy that we've developed now is exactly the way we used to do it. We used to do it relying on, and it is actually, when you look at our quarterly report, we actually say exactly how it is done. But the AG, for the first time this time, felt that these should actually be reduced into a policy as well as a procedure so that everybody knows how it is done. But exactly the way we've been doing it, that's how we've actually reduced it into the policy and the procedure. So that,
that's can me. I comment as well that in fact we have signed off those policy documents at the board level.
Okay. The issue is during the reporting period, it had not happened like that way. We actually relied on the PFMA, which guides us in terms of when certain things must be done, but the AG felt we need to have a policy, even if it refers to the PFMA and other documents. In terms of the condonation, there are details that we presented on the slide. We said the main reason was that we signed a five-year lease instead of a three-year lease. That was the reason. So there was nothing wrong with the procurement process as such. In fact, we've investigated this to the detail where the person who actually, the former CFO, gave permission to the IT specialist to pursue service providers to find the best deal. And when the best deal was found, that person was also authorized to sign, and that is before we actually took over, that permission was given. So we couldn't even discipline those people. So the condonation, it's actually allowed for as long as you disclose all the details. So we believe that the AG, as well as ourselves, we've actually disclosed the details. There's nothing that is underhand, and therefore we believe that that's on that basis that the AG, certainly not the AG, National Treasury, is actually reconsidering its position. We've just been told recently that they've sent a recommendation to the DG, so that they can actually give us the condonation. The impact of having a condonation, it's to the effect that you've actually disclosed all the details about the information to the point where National Treasury could then give you a condonation. They would not give you a condonation if the deal is suspect. While I agree with the Honourable Member that, yes, something wrong would have happened when you go and ask for a condonation, but you don't go and ask for a condonation when what you've done is obviously wrong and it's not something that happened as an oversight on the part of the organisation. It was an oversight on our part and we couldn't even discipline anybody. We've disclosed to the board as well the details of how this happened. The issue of the 8 years that the issue of the Feni Shah was not actually discovered. Maybe the difference between the two issues is that the one on the condonation or the finance lease. Okay. The issue of the condonation that we're seeking is not applicable to the one on the renting of desks and chairs. There are different issues. The condemnation that we're asking for was on the basis of the lease agreement. Instead of 3 years, CREP signed a five-year agreement. That's the only one where we're seeking condemnation. The one on the desk, yes, it's appearing now because we had felt that there was nothing wrong in the approach that we had used. We've actually spoken to the AG and we've agreed that we erred on our part. What we could have done was, like the CFO was saying, that the accounting officer could have actually signed this so that we submit to National Treasury a disclosure of how it was done, and it would actually have cleared the air. But again, I think we, as the AG becomes stricter and stricter, we discover things that perhaps in the past they were not discovered, and now they're actually strict on them. Where it is a repeat finding, then we deal with it differently. But where we were not warned that what we had done was wrong, we then engage with the AG, and on their advice, then we take action. The corrective action plan that we're talking about actually deals with these issues specifically. In terms of what is on page 32, performance information or relating to performance information, the review is in progress as we speak. As I indicated during my presentation, there's somebody in the office who is actually summarizing these. We've already engaged the different program managers that lead the specific programs where the changes should actually take place. Before the end of this month, we would have approached the executive authority with a request to review, to approve the targets that we're setting. So that is work in progress, but it's at the stage of being finalized. Yes, Mr. Noyana, I know that it was just a comment. Mr. Noyana has been part of the built environment for quite some time. He participates in terms of contractor development quite a lot. He was a board member of the CREP's first board, and it actually helps when they are cross-cutting and work between organizations that purport to do the same thing. He works a lot with small contractors, so they would actually need the information that would be supported by AGRIMA, as well as information that comes from the CREP. In terms of the strategy for contractor development in relation to the construction charter, the statement that we made there was that it was expected that the construction charter would have been ready by now, the charter council would have been set already. It's a matter that is beyond the CREP, but what we said is as soon as everything is done and we have a charter council, the CREP will then do the alignment and assist in rolling out the construction charter to various provinces. We've made a commitment in terms of that, but because the Department of Public Works is still facilitating the process, there were also issues where some emerging contractors felt the charter process shouldn't go forward, and then afterwards they said, no, it's fine. That process has actually delayed what the CREP is doing, and perhaps you'll understand that even under our logo, we have a motto that says development through partnership. We work through partnerships to make sure that we deliver on various things. If partners are not able to conclude certain things, we might actually have to wait for them. Same thing with the CCC office in Northwest. It's beyond us. We have to keep asking to retain the money because we've budgeted for the IT infrastructure there. But if the provincial department cannot conclude the procurement process, there's not much we can do except to keep going there and asking and advising them like we've actually done. We've held meetings, and we have a meeting coming up to the MEC level to make sure that there's an understanding of why this needs to be prioritized, because all the other provinces have done it. It's only Northwest that is left behind, and not because they could not have done it. It's procurement-related issues, and I think we've read quite a lot of things that have happened in Northwest around procurement issues. So it's one of those things, but they have actually handed over the site to the contractor. The contractor is busy now, but that's beyond the period of reporting. In terms of, maybe I'll start with risk management. The risk management committee has been set up. It is actually proceeding with its work.
it was established that the risk profile of the CRDB required a different board committee, as opposed to everything being done through the audit committee. So it has been well established now. Everything is running well. Even the meetings that we had quite a number of meetings to make sure that everything that needed to be approved had to be approved. Going forward, we've had confirmation now that we will actually slow down in terms of the meetings because we have systems in place now to actually do that. There's a point about a provincial stakeholder workshops. There were actually two workshops that were outstanding by the end of March. It was KwaZulu-Natal as well as Limpopo. And Limpopo had a constraint because they still had to launch their provincial office, the CCC there. So they were battling with the date, but they also told us about their own constraints and the road shows that they were doing at that time. It was very crucial for us because they actually give us the dates, and then we comply with that. We always want to work with the MEC, especially in that province, if possible, then the Premier as well. So we could not get the date, so Limpopo, that's how they actually suffered. KwaZulu-Natal, we also tried to negotiate with them until we got a date. So we now have all the provincial stakeholder forums that are linked, stakeholder workshops that are linked to the previous stakeholder forum, that is of 2009. We will be starting with a new phase of the provincial stakeholder workshops again. So we do this every year to make sure that we reach beyond what is legislated for the national stakeholder forum. We then go to the provinces so that people can understand our messages better. So the question that the chairperson was asking was in terms of the strategy for integrating contractor development in relation to the charter. That's the point that I dealt with before. Thank you. I'm not sure if my colleagues would like to add to all of that.
Just the one point. I appreciate the point about the seeking of a condemnation for something that has gone wrong or has been done wrongly. This is something that the board discussed at length, and it was very clear to us that if we went back, firstly, let me assure the House that the procurement that we are doing now are totally compliant. So there's no irregular procurement being done at the moment. But just on this particular case, if we went back to revisit the lease, we looked at the possibility of going to renegotiate the lease into a 3-year just to comply with the PFMA provision. And we found that it would actually cost us more to renegotiate that lease. So we then advised management to obtain the condemnation to insist on the condemnation from the National Treasury. And I must confirm that when I met with the Auditor General's representative, just in the feedback session, he actually expressed a surprise that we did not get a condemnation. So we are fairly confident that the condemnation would come, so that it doesn't become an issue in the current financial year's audit. So I can assure you that it's not a repeat. We're not going to have a repeat situation. And it's really a once-off error that has been fixed.
Thank you for the responses. Mr. Kaila, followed by Mr. Manan, then Mr. Honorable Matla.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, just two issues here. I think in one of the Sunday papers, whether it's the City Press or Sunday Times, you have put an advert or notice making contractors aware of fraudulent activities whereby certificates are issued for higher grades, CIDB certificates. Can you explain to us how bad is that? I picked that up in a Sunday paper. Then, secondly, chairperson of the board, outgoing chairperson, we have been worried for some time about the composition of the board. In the composition of the board, chairperson of the committee, we are aware that the established sector is represented in that board. So then that gives them an advantage because they know what is happening and so and so. One would like to see the emerging sector represented in the new board. That would give you less problems, my chairperson of the committee, because then the board will have a know-how about how the small contractors work. It will also assist us if they are represented in the new board, in as much as that we all have so many grade ones, which we've been talking about. For instance, what if we don't answer the one I'm going to talk about? You've got close to 18,000 grade ones, 18,000, 23,000, somewhere there. And we've said that before, and we are saying it now. There is not a chance that those people can get out of that. When we visited Chairperson Eastern Cape, if you remember very well, one of the questions we asked in Eastern Cape is that, what is the price of a one classroom? And the answer we got is that one classroom is about 1 million. Do you remember that, Chairperson? Now, if your grade one can do work of 650,000, previously, this is not the first board. In the TBV states, there were boards as well. But they are grade ones because most of government work, either two classroom, three classroom, they are grade ones, started at a two classroom, which is about 2 million worth of work, Chairperson. Now, if you say your grade one starts with 650, there are very few projects of 650,000. We don't want you to answer this here, but we want you to come up with a proper policy. We need a policy that is going to assist the people getting out of this mess up. You know, you need that type of policy, Chairperson, that is going to get our people out of the grade ones. Let the grade get into the market of the construction. That is what CITP was formed for. Unfortunately, I was part of formation of CITP. It was formed to assist our people. So we need then a policy to get these people out of this mess up here. So if then your one classroom is 1 million, your one classroom is 1 million, now what work will they be able to get out of government? Lastly, Chairperson, I think that one of the CETA, it was this committee that encouraged you to ask for funding from the CETA. One would like to know why are they not prepared to fund you? I remember it was this committee, the previous chairperson, that said there's a lot of money in the CETAs. So one would like to know as a committee, why are they not able to assist you, the construction CETAs? Because in your report you said they didn't assist you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kyle. I think maybe it's a point of correction. On page 9, grade ones are 39, on page 39. If you've got the annual report, grade ones start with 200,000, not the amount you mentioned. And then it's only grade twos that set 650,000. Let's take two because we're running out of time.
Okay, no, thank you very much. I'm going to be very short. Chair, indeed, I must say that there is, to a certain extent, some improvement in terms of the register and the gradings as compared to 2008-2009. But, Chair, I requested last day, and I recall this very well, the CEO was here, that, you know, we would probably want to get a sense on the participation of youth, or rather, you know, how many young people are indeed graded and so forth. And again, in this annual report, we are not getting that. There's women owned by grading per province, black owned by grade, of course. I would imagine in the women owned by grading, you would include young people there, young women and so forth. But we need a breakdown of youth owned by grading. We need to get a sense how many young people are indeed being regulated or graded and so forth. And I hope this plea, because it's for the second time. I hope it's taken serious this time around. Chair, let me just go back on the annual report, the actual annual report. On page 97, on the director's emoluments, I see, Chair, as at the year end, which ended on the 31st of March 2010, the total money spent on the board committee is 720. But when you look at the 2008-2009 report, it's 215. So there's a difference of about 500,000. And probably you can attribute that to travel allowance, as it appears here. Now, 2008-2009, travel allowance was 17,000. But 2009-2010, it's 423,000. It's a big difference, Chair. If probably we can be just, you know, or rather the CEO, the CFO, explain to us why this big difference, 17,000, 423,000, because that's how you can attribute this 215 against 720. Well, Honorable November appreciated the design of this report. It's very beautiful, absolutely. But Chair, really, I'm not excited by this whole design and the works and the flair and the glitz of this report. Because I would imagine the President of the Republic called upon government departments, entities, parastatals, and everybody else to spend less. And these things are very expensive. These things are very expensive. You see, if you look at this annual report, I am certain it's much more cheaper than this flare. Because there is just somewhere where we should start directing our money to. And that should go to our people. There are many programs, as I see them here, aimed at developing our people. Very good work that is done by the CIDP in terms of contractor development and everything else. Why don't we invest this money there and make ordinary, you know, simple annual reports than this flare? It's very costly. It's just absolutely, probably it's really assisting the entity in terms of boosting its corporate image. But I think it's just a plea. We must just start spending less and reroute our monies to where development really is. Thank you, Chair.
I think we'll take those two questions from two honourable members. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Acting Chair. and honorable members. I'll start with the questions that were raised by honorable Tyler. I will ask the CFO to explain about the remuneration of board members. I may give a bit of introduction there. excuse me. What happened some time ago is that we picked up that there were contractors who were parading as CIDP agents. They even drive cars that are marked as, agents that work for the CIDP. We wanted to just say that we do not have anybody that is an agent of the CIDP as such. Consultants are free to assist another contractor to actually complete the form. That's not a problem. Like lawyers would do, it's not a problem. But we're feeling that there was a lot of thrust in terms of people that were committing fraudulent activities. This also impacted on our staff. In fact, we issued that article after we had suspended staff at the CIDP office. Five members of staff were suspended, who are currently finalizing their investigations. One of them, who actually led to the suspension and alerted us to evidence being destroyed, decided to resign because the information was just overwhelming. So we're actually responding to that. You may find that if you go to Devon, we actually have a copy, it's just that I can't extract it here, where people are actually advertising that they are agents of the CIDP, you can get a registration in one day, and all these things. So we wanted people to make sure that if they approach the CIDP, the reason why we have offices in all the provinces so that people can go there. Yes, we cannot have offices in each and every town, for instance, but we wanted people to be aware that they may end up being investigated because what they are actually doing is illegal. You don't pay somebody else to process your application, and when you are confronted, you say, no, I didn't submit the application, it was submitted by this agency. So that's what we're trying to do, but we responded to a situation where we had to suspend five of our very senior staff members. It's actually a work in progress at this stage, and we believe that we have a very strong case. And by the way, we'll carry out the disciplinary hearings and take a decision, but we also report them, that is our employees, to the police so that the police can also investigate the crime accordingly. In terms of the composition of the board, and maybe I'll allow the chairperson to respond on that one, and then I'll come back to the other question.
Thank you. Honorable Gaira, the composition of the board is actually determined by the executive authority, because the advert inviting nominees is nationwide, just as at the moment it's out in the public domain, and the responses then will be compiled. It's compiled in the Department of Public Works. The interviews, the shortlisting is done within the department, and interviews conducted and appointments made. So the appointment is made by the minister, and I believe that the appointment will be approved by the cabinet in this particular instance. I must say that the current board is fairly wide spectrum of representation. We actually have, for instance, Mr. Canon Mariana, who represents small contractors, and we have people with a contractor background on the board. We have people. If it's a diversity of backgrounds, we have people from the professional sector. We have professional councils. People from professional councils. We have people working in their own right as contractors in their own right on the board. So the board, there are 13 members of the board, and people come from a wide diversity of backgrounds. I would expect that in making the next board appointment, the question of representation will definitely be considered by the department. But it's not the CIDP that determines that composition. It is the department that does that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I may just add there and say we are quite sensitive to these issues. We would like to have a board that is very representative. In my meeting next week with the department in preparation for appraising the minister about what work needs to be done, it's one of the points that we'd actually raise. But I think the Act stipulates that people must have knowledge of the industry, plus the other added expertise, like people who have financial expertise, people who have expertise around labor issues. But it's actually the combination of all those, because you may actually end up with a dysfunctional board if we're not strict in terms of how the requirements are actually applied. But we're quite sensitive to it. We would have loved to have an all-women board if that is achievable. But I just want to add also that the CRDP has a number of other mechanisms. Apart from the board, we have the stakeholder forum whose membership is 2 years. And again, we advertise and call for nominations so that each segment can nominate any person, whether it's a woman, a man. And we go through a stringent process to actually bring on board a balance between the board and the stakeholder forum membership. And they meet at least once a year, but there are those that we work with continuously. We've had people from the trade union movement actually getting involved in the stakeholder forum. Plus, also they have an opportunity to come and report on the performance of the CRDP at the legislated independent review of the CRDP. So we try to actually accommodate people in various ways. And we have, outside of that, we have engagements with the emerging sector. I attend meetings quite regularly with the Black Business Caucus in the built environment. The improved regulations that we're talking about, we've actually been engaging with them for far more than a year specifically to deal with that. So we do actually that accommodation. In the provinces, we actually try and reach those people that cannot travel to Gauteng, for instance, and we're trying to reach especially the emerging sector. Our vision and mission is actually targeting the emerging sector. So in a way, there are other mechanisms that we use to draw the emerging sector there. I think we'll need another time perhaps to talk about grade ones and why perhaps we may have a lot of grade ones as people who are entering the market. I would like us to actually deal with it on another day. In terms of the CETA, we've had former chairperson of the CETA, who is also a board member of the CRDP, Mr. Gavin Stradom, who has quite a lot of knowledge about the industry. And he facilitated also that we should have access to the CETA. We applied, I think, on two occasions, and we're not getting the real reasons why the CRDP was not given funding. Not that they were negative, but there were certain compliance issues that they spoke about. We then seconded our people to go and work with the people at the CETA. There's another application where we were requested to resubmit. We haven't had an answer in terms of that. But the attitude is changing. It's becoming positive. We've signed an MOU with them. But what is interesting is that the EFDA that I spoke about earlier, Employment Skills Development Agency, is actually supposed to be established by the CETAs. But in this case, the former management did not want to do the ESTA, and the industry said, we don't have an ESTA, CRDP, can you do it? So we applied to the Department of Labor to establish the ESTA, and the Department of Labor then gave us permission to do that. Now we have a new managers, yeah, and a new chairperson, and they've expressed an interest in participating in the ESTA. We've always said they are welcome, and it looks like now things may change. We may actually get funding to support the ESTA. But in the meantime, the CRDP decided that on the basis of the funds that we have, let us start the pilot. So the working relationship has improved quite a lot. Coming to Honorable Manana, maybe I must just express a sense of maybe appreciation for the positive statements that were made, but also say that we note that this may look very fancy. What happens is just this outside cover that looks like this. The annual report, in fact, we are supposed to respond today to the minister about the cost of the annual report that we produce. If you look at the other things, it's just pictures. It's exactly the same like the other one. It's just this outside page where we felt this time let us celebrate the contribution by the construction industry. All our annual reports are actually like that. We've never actually produced fancy annual reports, but we felt we shouldn't miss this opportunity. Remember, this goes to people outside South Africa. We distribute it, and they can see how South Africa is actually performing, and we're requested to actually provide more information. So it was our way of contributing, but we note the concern, and we'll actually talk to the communications department and deal with a different design going forward. We might not have another 2010 anyway.
And then the participation of the youth, if I understand your question, you're saying we're not reflecting it here, but not necessarily that we don't have it, because this slide that I'm showing now, we send this information, and I'm not sure if Parliament receives this information. We send it quite regularly so that you can see how it is structured. Yes, the youth may be part of women, may be part of black businesses and others, but the way I'm understanding it, you want it in the annual report as well. So we've noted that we'll actually include it. May I request the CFO to just take us through the remuneration of board members and why the different figures?
Just a small reminder, we're left with 5 minutes. Actually, it's almost 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The report, if you look at it there, we have had more meetings than in the previous years. And these were necessitated by, you know, the number of board task teams that we've had that are taking place. The risk committee, which like officially was formed in the current the year under review, actually started working actively, you know, in that year. And if you look, for example, the deputy chairperson, we've indicated that he's also a chairperson of the risk committee. If you go down, there's a member who's a member of the board or the committee and the risk committee and all that. But I'd like to do a more thorough analysis and data we can always provide of the actual breakdown. But, you know, the main driver, you know, the activity was mainly the number of meetings that took place.
Sorry, honorable members, I don't know whether we need to continue or do we still have some questions? Or we wrap up? Okay. Yeah, I mean, we need to add the people with disability. We don't find any in your report. And lastly, it's just our experience with CIDB. I think when we went to Durban, I don't know when was that, was it 2007, were shown to the regional offices, quite beautiful and really, although they were still under construction. But what really impressed us as members of parliament was the fact that when we went to, I don't know which venue was that, all the emerging contractors were called in one big hall, and CIDB was there, the MEC was there, and they were able to air their views, and they got answers on the spot. I mean, if the regional officers can do that, I think we can go somewhere. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was in Mpangeni, yeah. I'm talking about these fraudulent activities. I mean, to avoid that, because you can't go. The regional officers can be able to visit the towns, the nearest towns, and then they can be able to preach to the people that people like this with cars marked CIDB must never believe them. I mean, a lot of work they can do. Rather than sitting in the offices, they can do a lot of work in the field. Thanks. Thank you. Have any outstanding? Anything that, if not asked, somebody will die. Okay. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the IDP and really we are saying keep up the good work and until we, I hope some people will ask for the second time so that the good work continues. Honorable members, I declare this meeting closed, and thank you so much for your